But do you know what happens? Almost immediately, it grows into a lamppost. Now, I didn't tell you this, but in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when they go through the wardrobe and enter Narnia, the first thing they see is the lamppost. And the lamppost is the only sort of modern thing in Narnia, so you wonder where it came from. Well, this is where it came from. How did it grow? Well, this is the first day of Narnia's creation. The soil is incredibly fertile. Whatever you put in grows. Later on, the kids put some candy, and it grows into a candy tree. It's kind of neat. Now, all of us would be, how wonderful we could grow things. What do you think Uncle Andrew thinks? Andrew thinks, think of all the weapons I could grow. I could grow tanks. Remember the old song, they took paradise and they paved paradise and made it a parking lot? Well, this is what Andrew's doing. He wants to turn paradise into a munitions factory. I mean, again, here is the utter baseness of evil. It cannot even respond to good. In the face of fertility, all it wants to do is create more weapons to kill more people. Slowly, the song changes, and what happens is the earth starts to move, and then bubbles form, and then the bubbles burst, and out of each bubble comes a different animal. It's a wonderful way of creating the animal world. Then all the animals get in a circle around Aslan, and to a chosen portion, Aslan walks up and sort of touches his nose to their nose, and when he does that, they become talking animals. He only does that to a remnant, maybe 10 or 20%. Then he tells the talking animals that it's their responsibility to watch over Narnia and take care of the other animals. But he gives them a stern warning. He says that they must not do evil or they will forfeit the gift of language. Narnia is now complete. But alas, Aslan must tell everyone that already evil has entered into the world, of course, in the form of Jadis. And so, to combat this evil, Aslan sets two remedies in motion. The first remedy is he exclaims, Frank, the cab driver, the first king of Narnia, then he whisks his wife from the earth into Narnia to be the first queen. And that is why you may have wondered why you have these human kings and queens of Narnia rather than animals. Well, Aslan makes a decree that from now on, the kings and queens of Narnia will be human beings. You see, it's more fun to read The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe first and then find out the origin, or if you want to call it the etymology or the etiology, I suppose is the better word, of why this is. The second remedy is that he sends Diggory on a mission to get a magic apple that will protect Narnia. And that's what I want to tell you about now. Now, the quest for the magic apple turns out to be, like Perelandra, a replay of the temptation in the garden. In the Western world, if you hear the word apple, you have to think of the fall of Adam and Eve. Now, Diggory is accompanied on his quest by Polly and by Strawberry. What Aslan does is he says, Strawberry, would you like to be a flying horse? And he says, oh, yes, Aslan. So Aslan touches him, and he grows wings like Pegasus. My son has a little make-believe horse, and he named his horse Fledge. My daughter named her horse Sassy, which gives you a sort of insight into her character. But anyway, my son's horse is named Fledge. He loves the story of Fledge. Well, on top of the back of Fledge, they soar to the highest mountain in Narnia, and on top of the mountain is a walled Edenic garden, and the tree is in there. Diggory goes into the garden alone, and in there he meets Jadis, who has just eaten one of the apples, and by so doing has gained eternal youth. Then she turns to Diggory and tempts him to ignore Aslan and eat the apple himself. He says, go on, child, eat the apple, and you will be immortal. But good old Diggory says, no, I don't want to live forever. And then Lewis says, sort of parenthetically, of course, when Diggory went to school, boys and girls were still taught that it was morally wrong to steal. They still were taught virtue in the late Victorian age. Our kids aren't taught virtue. The only virtue our kids are taught is not to be racist, sexist, or homophobic. And those are good things. Tolerance is very much a part of the Tao. But that is not the be-all and end-all of the Tao. And since those isms are ripped out of the Tao, what it usually means to our kids is not tolerance, but relativism. In fact, I would sum up the modern generation in one word, whatever. And that is what tolerance often means to them. Because it's been ripped out of the Tao, all they know is relativism. What's the difference? You like chocolate, I like vanilla. So we're still taught virtue, but we're not taught the Tao anymore, the moral code.